And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on this Monday as we kickstart another week with plenty to do over the next couple of hours. Coming up, the Bucks get their first win of the NBA Finals. Plus, Conor McGregor suffers another loss on Saturday and then had injury added to insult. Italy wins the Euro Cup. We have the Home Run Derby tonight. Another blow for the Atlanta Braves. And if you disagreed with my take on the Olympics last week, I think I found an even worse take on the Olympics. Plus, which one of those sports needs fans the most? And what were the worst moves of the NFL offseason? Who are pretenders and contenders? And this radio station may just be haunted. Got to get to a story from over the weekend around these parts. Got plenty to do over the next couple of hours. Toby Hall, former big league catcher and played in Charleston, will join us about an hour from now as we head into Major League Baseball's All-Star break. And we'll be joined by former big leaguers throughout the week to commemorate the midway point of the Major League Baseball season and also to talk about charity softball game coming to the Lowcountry next week over at Joe Riley Park. With it till 3 on this Monday, you can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. You can get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, or via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or head online, charlestonsportsradio.com. And there you can click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted. Or you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? A new week, and it's off to a pretty good start. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. A full week this week. What? This is so unusual. What is this? On air all 5 days this week. Happy to be here. Let's start with the NBA Finals. We got a lot to get to. You know, it's this week, as I have been saying, in anticipation for this week. It's always referred to as the slowest week in the sports year when you get to the All-Star break. But because of the calendar, we still have the NBA Finals going on due to the pandemic. And then also, not only do you have the Olympics coming up in a couple of weeks, that's unique, right? Every 4 years, 2 years, whatever it is. But also, additionally, this past weekend, there was quite a bit going on with Conor McGregor, with the soccer match yesterday for the Euro Cup. So we'll get to all that coming up. The Atlanta Braves with another brutal weekend heading into the All-Star break. Well, let's start with the NBA Finals and the Milwaukee Bucks getting their first win of the series yesterday. Now, I hope you listened to me on Friday when I said, go all in on the Bucks Game 3. Because history tells us when you go home down 2-0 in any series, not just the NBA Finals, any playoff series. When that team is down 2-0, they're desperate. They're at home. The other team that's up 2-0, right? Maybe they just took their foot off the gas a little bit, plus they had to travel. They're playing in a visiting gym, maybe the first time playing in that gym in a long time. And role players always play better at home. Yeah, that's the real home court advantage. Not so much the fans, but that the role players are more comfortable at home. Allows them to play better, and a lot of these games come down to those role players. The stars are going to get their numbers, but which side can get more production from the second and third tier players to make the difference? Yesterday was the Bucks. Now, Giannis was great once again and became the first player since Shaq to go for over 40 points, over 10 rebounds in back-to-back playoff games or back-to-back NBA final games. And people have compared Giannis to Shaq in recent weeks. And that could be a divisive comparison. Many people believe that's ridiculous. How could you compare him to Shaq? I do see the similarities. Right, they're two guys that obviously couldn't shoot it very well. Giannis is far more athletic than Shaq, but Shaq, for his size when he first came in the league, was incredibly athletic. Then he got a little bigger as his career went on, and he couldn't move as well. But early on, like his Orlando Magic days, or when he was coming out of LSU, Right? He was shattering backboards. That dude was a freak. And he could get up and down the floor. Right? Kobe used to toss some alley-oops early on in his Laker days. Then, you know, he hit his 30s, got a little bigger, legs get worn down, feet get tired. He's a little beat up, couldn't get up and down the floor, put some weight on. Maybe didn't work as hard. That was always the knock on Shaq, second half of his career. Right? He was a little too having too much fun. Maybe not enough hard work at that point. But both guys dominate in the paint. Neither guys are going to do much for you outside of the paint. Obviously not Shaq. He wasn't shooting many threes at all. Giannis can't shoot the three. Both struggled at the free throw line. And that's been a big story for Giannis this year. It was always a big story for Shaq. Couldn't make his foul shots. He had the hack of Shaq many years ago. Giannis, you almost prefer to send him to the free throw line at times. So there are some comparisons there. Now, the difference, you know, Shaq played in the post. Giannis is more of attacking to get into the post and get to the rim and lay it up. He's playing more on the perimeter. Giannis can defend guys that aren't just big, slow centers. So there are plenty of differences, some similarities as well. But I think the main similarity when it comes to Giannis is that if you were to compare him to, say, that Lakers team from 20 years ago, he would be more of a Shaq than a Kobe. Right? Kobe was the guy you wanted the ball in his hands at the end of the game when you needed a bucket. Shaq may carry you through the first three quarters. He may be the most dominant player for the first 40 minutes. But in those final minutes, when you needed a basket, when you needed to put the game away, it was Kobe that you went to. And for Giannis, he's more of that Shaq. That he'll get you to that point, but he needs help to carry you to the victory. He can carry you for 40 minutes, but at the end of the game or in a big-time game, he's going to need some additional help as well. You know, Shaq never won anything without a great guard. The first time he got to the NBA Finals, he had Penny Hardaway, and that wasn't enough to win. Then he goes to L.A., and Kobe did provide enough for them to win. They won quite a bit. And then Shaq, even when he won again, right, he had to team up with Dwayne Wade. Big guys always need guards. You can't win with simply just a good big. Right? Even Tim Duncan always needed either Ginobili and or Tony Parker, eventually Kawhi as well. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won his first championship with Oscar Robertson, then didn't win for years. Took him a decade. He next won a championship when he went to L.A. Who was he playing with? Magic Johnson. When he first got to L.A., his first 4 years there, they didn't do much. Then they draft Magic Johnson. Now they're winning championships throughout the 80s. For as good as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was, he still couldn't win on his own. He needed that help. Big guys can't win on their own. Giannis is no different. Look at the last two games. I told you, first player since Shaq to go over 40 points and over 10 rebounds in back-to-back finals games. They lost the first one. They won the second one. So what was the difference? Because Giannis got his numbers both nights. Well, the difference was not only did Devin Booker play terrible yesterday, but also if you go back to game two from the Bucks standpoint, Giannis got no help from Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday. They were terrible. Yesterday, much better. Right? Middleton made almost half of his shots. He scored 18. Drew Holiday made more than half of his shots, was 5 of 10 from beyond the arc. He scored 21. And when Drew Holiday was on the floor specifically, the Bucks outscored the Suns by 22 points. That was even more dominant than Giannis and his output or how the team played when Giannis was on the floor. And that's the big difference. And it's part of the reason why I like the Bucks very much yesterday, because role players always play better on their home floors. Middleton and Drew Holiday will struggle on the road. We've seen it throughout the postseason. Back home, they'll look pretty good. They needed that game yesterday. You lose that game, you fall down 3-0, you're done. Right? No team has ever come back from a 3-0 deficit in the NBA, and it wouldn't happen this year. Now, the work is not done yet for Milwaukee. You got to try to even this series because you still have to go back to Phoenix. The Suns still get to play two of the last three at home, so even if the Bucks win Game 4, at some point, they're going to have to find a way to win on the road. What Giannis is doing is remarkable. Good first game, but kind of slow because he's coming back from that injury. And then since then, still playing with this banged-up knee, going for over 40. Last two games, NBA Finals, he's averaging 42 points, 13 rebounds, getting right to the rim. Yesterday, he was 14 for 15 on shots at the rim. Now, he missed all 8 shots away from the rim. That's the problem for Giannis. But he's like a locomotive, right? When he gets on a roll, you can't stop him from getting to the rim. And when he gets there, he usually finishes. Can't shoot from the outside. Inconsistent at the free throw line. And those are the comparisons to Shaq. Dominant in the paint. Dominant around the rim. The difference is Shaq is in the post. You pass him the basketball. He'll put it in. Giannis will get there himself. But the similarities being they both need help to get over that final step. They'll get you there. Right, Shaq, will help you get to the NBA Finals. He'll help you get a lead in the fourth quarter, but at the end of the game, you're not drawing up a play to go inside to Shaq. The play was drawn up for Kobe. Same idea with Giannis. He'll get you there. He'll give you a lead into the fourth quarter, but he's going to need some help to put it away. He did not get that help in the first two games. They lost in Phoenix. Got that help yesterday from Middleton and Holiday, and they got their first win. And I don't know if irony is the proper term, but it is interesting that for all the talk about injuries this postseason and all the All-Stars getting injured, all the big names being injured, that when it comes to crowning the champion, at least in this series, it may come down to Dario Saric, who is obviously not a big name. But you lose a big guy, 6'10", right, gets injured, out for the rest of the series for the Suns, and that clears up some space inside for Giannis. Makes it a little bit easier to attack the rim, to get to the rim, to finish in the paint. And it's similar to a few years ago when the Warriors blew that 3-1 lead. And people don't really talk about it because he's not a star, but that series changed when Andrew Bogut got injured. And that allowed, right, LeBron James to get to the rim a little easier. It opened up the paint a little bit more. And the Cavs were able to come back and beat the Warriors. They were up 3-1. And then Draymond got suspended too, right, for like the kick in the groin. So you lost him as well, at least for a game. And you lost your rim protectors. Makes it a little bit easier for LeBron to get to the rim. Same idea here. When the Suns lose one of their, just their big bodies, even if he's not that skilled, just to clog up the center of the lane without him, right, now Giannis is going for over 40 points. So you can make the argument that the biggest injury of the postseason was Harden or Kyrie or Kawhi Leonard, because without those injuries, the Suns and or the Bucks probably wouldn't get to this point. But now that they're here, what is the biggest injury? It's not the knee injury to Giannis. It's not the broken nose for Devin Booker. It's not Chris Paul with the arm injury earlier or even coming back from COVID. But it's losing that 6'10 presence inside from a guy who, you know, only averaged something like 8 points a game. 8 points, 4 rebounds, that's what you're losing. On paper, it doesn't seem like a huge loss. But on the court, it can be. And Giannis is having a field day the last couple of games. I'm sure he'll continue to play well, but if the Bucks win this series, it'll come down to the supporting cast. And this is what we've been saying for years, that for Giannis, he needs that help. It's why they went out and got Jrue Holiday this year. And he hasn't played much better than the man he was replacing in Eric Bledsoe. But if Giannis can pull this off and get that championship, it'd be a huge boost for the legacy. Two-time MVP. Has never played well enough in these moments, but if he gets that ring and does so by carrying this team, by scoring over 40 points a night, that'd be a big change for Giannis' legacy moving forward, and he's still only in his mid-20s. Bucks get the first win of the series last night, but the work obviously far from done. They still need to even up this thing. You have to win once in Phoenix as well, and in order to do so, you're going to have to get those type of performances from a Chris Middleton and a Jrue Holiday like they did yesterday. Right? Even Brook Lopez was pretty solid. P.J. Tucker had a couple of good shots. Portis played well off the bench, all things considered. Going to need those role players. Big guys can't do it on their own. Kareem couldn't, Shaq couldn't, Hakeem Olajuwon, when he won his championships, couldn't. He got some help from other guys. Right? Tim Duncan always had other supporting casts around him. Back in the day, you needed a big guy to win. Bigs aren't as important now, but even when you had that all-important big guy, you still needed a good guard to pair with him. Right? Like Patrick Ewing still needed John Starks, and he never won a championship, but just to get there. He always needed somebody else to try to help him. You can't just win with a big. And Giannis isn't your typical big, but that's how he plays. He has to get to the rim. He has to shoot around the rim. But he needs those guards to help him out to get over that final hurdle in order to win these big games. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones because Jerome is with us. Jerome, what's going on? How are you? Oh, the intro's back. That's right. And Jerome's back with us. Jerome, what's going on? How are you?
I'm glad to see Milwaukee play with some anger and some nastiness last night, okay? I'm glad to see it. You, just because you get hit don't mean you got to fall down and keep taking it. Get up and fight. That's what they did last night. And I'm proud of that because the Suns are a dirty-ass team, okay? Devin Booker's a dirty player because he pushes off every time he's got the ball. I mean, and did you see Chris Paul last night when he did the Connaughton? The guy, look, let me ask you something about this. Connaughton takes a shot to the jaw last night, and he gets the foul. You want to explain that to me?
Yeah, huh? Yeah. You know, Chris Paul is always that scrappy player. When you're undersized like that.
Scrappy, dirty.
Yeah, you know, some people feel that way.
That means dirty, yeah. I know what it means. I heard Van Gundy, oh, yeah, he plays with, Devin Booker, he plays with an edge.
Right.
I said, yeah, he don't look like he's a nice guy because he hardly ever smiles. Hey, he's kind of like cutthroat. He is a dirty player, okay? I've watched him in this series a couple of times, and nobody complains to the officials more than him. He gets away with pushing off, and what does he do? He's chirping at the official last night. He's getting up off the bench. Man, be quiet. When you get the calls, you don't say anything. But then when things ain't going your way, all of a sudden you like the little, you want to take your little dinky and go home. Come on now. You can't have it both ways.
No.
And Ayton, don't get me started on him, because he pulled that guy's jersey in the game against the Clippers to help him tie the game up, and that's how they won that game. So, hey, when they talk about, oh, he plays with an edge, oh, he got a bag of tricks. Yeah, and the officiating, okay? Mm-hmm. It is so maddeningly inconsistent, it drives me out of my mind sometimes. I mean, hey, the guy practically, like, undressed Tucker last night while he was going for the ball. Hey, Tucker gets the foul. He's looking at the magician, look of incredulous on his face at the Zebras, and they're looking at him like, what are you talking about? Hey, who was the guy a couple years ago talking about, you know, how crooked the officiating in the NBA is? Oh, it is crooked. Because I heard him crying last night about, well, so-and-so was officiating last night, so you know they weren't going to win that game.
Yes.
They don't give anybody credit, man.
Chris Paul.
Let's see some more fight on Wednesday, okay? I love it. Look. They made them taste their own blood. Let's see if they can keep doing it. All right? And by the way, Conor McGregor, he's a bum and a fraud. Go away. Okay? Tell the people in the media, stop falling for this act. He's a clown. He's as big of a con artist as that guy that called himself going into space the other day. That ain't space, man. Space is going to the moon, Pluto, Mars, places like that. That's not space. He's a con artist. $255. I would give that guy $2.50 to go on one of his fake spaceships, okay? That's all I got to say.
Well, I love it, Jerome. Always good to hear from you. I'm tempted. Look, it's a Monday, right? We all have a case of the Monday sometimes. I'm tempted. Just let Jerome go the rest of the way. I'll take the rest of Monday off. I love the passion. You know, he's like Serpico. Serpico, I got nothing but crooked cops around here. He's calling out everybody on the Suns. Got nothing but dirty players around here. Now, that's always been the knock on Chris Paul. A lot of people think he's dirty, right? Scrappy, you could use all these other terms that mean the same thing. Crafty. But when you're a smaller size, those guys always have a chip on their shoulder. They have to feel like they have to make up the difference out on the floor. So, you know, when you get those smaller guards, that's why they always call them scrappy. Those scrappy little guards, because they'll mix it up with the other guys. There was a play last night, a loose ball. Middleton knocks Chris Middleton over. I thought it was clean, but, you know, a little physical. Because that's when, you know, you feel you got that chip on your shoulder, you're undersized. Now, in regards to the officiating, NBA officiating has always been very inconsistent over the years. But what Jerome was referencing, Chris Paul has now lost 12 straight playoff games when Scott Foster is officiating. And he was the crew chief last night. Maybe just a coincidence. But the Bucks down 2-0. The NBA probably wants a nice, long, interesting series. They assigned Scott Foster last night, and going in, everybody thought, oh, boy, here we go. The Suns, they're not winning. The Suns are not winning tonight. And Chris Paul lost another playoff game with Scott Foster. Now, watching the game, I don't think it's because of the officials. But I do think that's something. It's something. It's interesting. And the Bucks took 10 more free throws than the Suns last night. But regardless, the Bucks were the better team last night. Beat the Suns. And they better have come out down 2-0 at home. They better come out with that attitude last night. As Stephen A. said after the game, the Bucks big boyed the Suns. That's what you better do. Your season's on the line. You're in front of your home fans trying to play for a championship. They should have come out there with the more energy than the Suns. Phoenix just left their building. They're up 2-0. They're traveling for the first time in a little while. Milwaukee, you get to go back home needing this victory. And they played like it last night.
And he said that Richard Branson did not go into space.
Yeah,
you have to go to the moon.
Yeah, it seems like
so John Glenn and Alan Shepard and all those guys, they never went to space.
What did Richard Branson even do? I missed this. He went into space?
Yes, he actually he's had a company that's been looking at taking space tourists into space.
Yes.
For a while. And they actually had a successful flight this weekend. He was on it.
Wow.
It took off like a regular airplane instead of the rocket.
Huh.
And actually hit 50 miles above Earth, which is considered outer space.
So Branson himself, he was on there. He went into outer space. Wow.
Yeah, Virgin Galactic, I think, is the name of the company.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he beat Jeff Bezos up there. I don't know if Elon Musk has any interest in going. He just wants to make things happen and make the money off it.
Would you be a passenger on one of those? If they gave you the opportunity, hey, we could send you into space on a plane, a rocket ship, whatever these companies are doing, would you be willing to do it?
Sure, why not?
Yeah? How much would you be willing to pay to go to space?
Okay, that's a different question.
Because I'm sure these trips are going to be very costly. I don't know. I would have to wait a long time to make sure things are good and safe, right? Like, I'm not afraid of flying. We have enough data over the years, enough history that flying is safe. In fact, statistically speaking, it's safer than driving. So I have no problem flying, but then if you want to tell me, like, hey, okay, now we're going to send you into space, okay, well, that's a big difference. I have to wait. I'm going to have to wait a little while to get enough data to make sure, you know, it's completely safe. And even then, I don't know. I mean, it'd be remarkable. It'd be awesome to be up there and see those sights. I can only imagine. But I would have to give it quite some time. And let's do a lot of these trials. Let's do a lot of these flights. Let's make sure everyone's okay. And then comes to the price. Got to be honest, it would be really cool to go into space, but I also wouldn't be willing to pay that much to do it. Probably not as much as it's ever going to cost. You tell me I could go to space for like $200. Okay, I'm in. You tell me it's going to be like a few thousand. No, thanks. I'm not interested. I don't care to do it that much. I'll watch, I'll watch some movie instead, or I'll watch a video on YouTube. Richard Branson can record it for me. I'll watch that and see the footage instead. That's good enough for me. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Roy Williams is with us. Roy Williams, what's going on? How are you?
I tell you what, Luke. We've had Einstein. We have Max Planck. You know, we have relativity, and now we have Jerome. You know, the father of astrophysics. I tell you what, I'm about to add nothing constructive to this, so I want to pre-warn you, but Jerome, we'll fly you up 50 miles up in the air, and then we'll push you out. And when you hit the ground, and they use the spatula to get your ass up off the sidewalk, make sure you tell the EMTs that you really didn't go to outer space.
That's right. I like it.
Like I said, look, I had nothing constructive to offer, just Jerome making me laugh. That's all. So sweet pickled bus is missing a passenger. That's okay, man.
Hey,
we'll holler at you later.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. Roy Williams. So, wait, Richard Branson, how high did he go or how far did he go?
It was at least 50 miles above, you know, the Earth's surface.
What is considered, what's technically outer space?
I think they did say that 50 miles is considered outer space.
All right. Then Richard Branson pulled it off. I don't think I would ever do such a thing. Like I said, give it a few years. Let's test this thing out. Send some other people up there. And then, you know, decades from now, you tell me, okay, it's, you know, just as safe as a regular flight. Then I'll consider it. Coming up, Conor McGregor. Jerome mentioned Conor McGregor. Maybe that's something we can agree on between Jerome and myself. Conor McGregor has become like Tony Montana or Tony Montana. I always wonder, was it just his accent? What's his actual name in Scarface? Is it Tony Montana, but he pronounces it Montana? Or is that how you really pronounce his last name? Let's just call him Scarface. Conor McGregor has become Scarface. Plus, Italy got the big win yesterday. We'll get to all that coming up. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Oh, I'm so ready. Come on, my baby. Honey in the beehive, honey fun. Every time you kiss.
Coming up, Conor McGregor is becoming Scarface for Tony Montana. Get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Somehow got into the conversation of Richard Branson. I missed this over the weekend, I'll be honest with you. I had no idea this was going on. But Richard Branson went technically into space. He's about to turn 71 this week, in fact. He's worth $6 billion. I'm curious, at what point does it become worth it to take a trip like that? Because I'm sure he felt comfortable enough with all like the studies they've done and everything that they've got this thing figured out. But still, there's got to be some risk involved to be like the first to do that. 70 years old, about to be 71. Obviously, has lived a great life. But still, right, worth $6 billion, he could do whatever he wants. Still young enough, 71. I'm sure he hopes to have like another 20 years, 15, 20 years. I guess at that point, he's done everything he's probably wanted to. Like, you take the chance. God forbid, worst case scenario, something goes wrong, you're willing to take that chance. Like me personally, you tell me I could be on that flight, I'd say no, probably no, thank you. Like I said earlier, right? Let's test this thing out for a while before I take that chance. But you come to Richard Branson, who's done a lot in his life, 71, got all the money in the world, willing to take that chance, and it worked out. Goes into outer space. And I guess Stephen Colbert was the host of the broadcast, Charleston's own, and Elon Musk was on hand. I was just reading about it now. It is pretty crazy that they pulled that off. So maybe soon you could pay tons of money to be on that flight with Richard Branson and go into outer space, or at least what most people consider to be outer space. We'll get to Conor McGregor coming up in just a little bit. He lost Saturday, broke his ankle in the process, insult and injury. But we got to do a little celebrating first because Italy won the Euro Cup yesterday. Joe, hit that celebratory music. Italy wins the Euro Cup with the PKs yesterday. It'd be England. And, let me tell you, I'm a big Italian soccer fan today. Oh, yeah. Watched my one soccer game of the year. And it was a great game. And I know where I grew up, I don't know if it resonates so much around here. I saw big celebrations in Hartford, Connecticut, where I grew up, New York, even out in California. Italians taken to the street. Most of them probably haven't watched any soccer other than yesterday, like myself, but still take all the credit for the big win. Great win yesterday. Now, I was looking this up because I'm very curious. And I saw that for Charleston, 4% of residents are Italian here in Charleston.
Which actually from Italy or Italian descent.
Italian descent, yeah. Like, I'm not from Italy.
And I'm willing to bet that most people here who call themselves Italian, not just here in the area, but also across the country, most of them have never set foot in Italy.
Oh, I'm sure. I'll be honest, I've never set foot in Italy. I'm a second generation American. My father is born here. My grandfather's from Italy. I'm from here. 4% of Charleston's population is Italian. But yeah, you know, and by descent, which ranks 8,662 in the country for cities or towns with most Italian population. If you ever want to know if someone's Italian or not, don't worry, they'll tell you, right? Italians are very proud of their heritage.
Or see if they're talking with their hands.
That's true. That's why I always break the microphones around here. I hear Bobby's always blaming me. It's probably accurate. I'm always fidgeting, moving my hands around, touching things. But they got the win yesterday, and everyone went crazy in certain parts of the country. I don't know if that's the case around here. I don't think there are any big celebrations around here, but I heard big things from, you know, specifically the Northeast. Even I saw the videos out in California, people celebrating. Great win for Italy yesterday. And unfortunately, I couldn't find my Italian soccer shirt. I've moved enough that I've lost all sorts of shirts over the years. And so I had a nice Italian soccer shirt and had a star for all the World Cups. Italy has won. I don't know where that is. Then I had another nice Italian shirt with the flag and I don't know where that is. So I got a different Italian shirt on. Like I said, how do you know if someone's Italian or not? They'll let you know. I got my Italian shirt on today after the big win.
But then the question becomes, are you Italian or are you Sicilian?
I'm both. Sicilian. I have family from Sicily. I actually did the DNA test not too long ago, and I'm more southern Italy, Sicily, than northern Italy, my family. So, I believe my grandmother's side came from Sicily, I believe. I may have it mixed up. Anyways. So, congratulations to Italy. Now, it was a great game. If you're a soccer fan and you watched it yesterday, regardless of who you're rooting for, great game. And a big debate to come out of it is about the penalty kicks, because that's how the game was decided yesterday, or the match, right? The championship was decided. And I know Greeny was talking about this earlier here on this same station, because he's very anti-PKs in a moment like that. And I have buddies that are big into soccer. I'm not. I grew up playing the sport. That grandfather I mentioned was the commissioner once of a professional soccer league. He was big into soccer. I played growing up. I have buddies who played in college. I'm friends with the DeChico family. Tony DeChico was the coach of the women's national team in the 90s when they won and Brittany Chastain took her shirt off. He was the coach of that team. They're actually making a movie about it. I grew up with the DeChico family. But I never really got into soccer after I stopped playing at a young age. But I watched that game yesterday. I have no problem with the penalty kicks. In fact, I think that's the most, and maybe this is just me being an average soccer fan, I think that's the most exciting part of the sport. Same idea with hockey. I'm an average hockey fan. I think the best part of hockey is the shootout. And I have friends who played hockey growing up, huge hockey fans. They hate it, right? My buddies who are the big soccer fans don't necessarily like penalty kicks deciding. Just like I'm a big baseball fan, I don't really like the extra inning rules of putting a runner at second. So I guess it depends on if you're like an average soccer fan or if you're a big-time soccer fan. You feel like it's kind of goes against the idea of the sport. But I love it. I think it's great. I think it's more exciting than probably any other finish you can get in sports. And I do think it's a great way to decide a championship. Look, they gave them 120 minutes yesterday. And each team scored once. You can't figure it out in 120 minutes. How much longer are we going to go? Because it's so hard to score goals in soccer. In fact, the team that scores first wins 70% of soccer games. Why? Because it's usually the only goal of the match. You score first, you hold on to that lead, and you win. So when England scored and they set the record for fastest goal yesterday in the Euro Cup, scoring in like the first 3 minutes, I thought, oh boy, well, we're in big trouble. And I say we because, yes, I was pulling for Italy. And even though I hadn't watched any Italian soccer all year, I was all into it yesterday, calling them we. Oh boy, we're in trouble. We better come back. Like I'm out there playing. As I've always said, I'm a fair-weather Italian soccer fan. I'll always pull for America, but our men's soccer team isn't good enough, and so once they get eliminated, then I'm always on Team Italy. And I was all in yesterday. But England scores that first goal, and I thought, oh boy, we're in big trouble. These soccer teams don't score goals. But I heard Greeny talking about it earlier. A lot of other people throughout the sports world have been talking about it. What do you want to do? You want to keep playing? I've heard this idea of taking players off the field. You take two players off the field like every 5 minutes. You tell me that's a better solution? Eventually, we may get down to three-on-three soccer. You're telling me that's more like the game of soccer than a penalty kick shootout? I don't know. I disagree. I think that would look pretty ridiculous. I think that would look pretty tacky. I love the shootouts. I love the penalty kicks at the end of a soccer game. And England, right, saved their young guys for the end, and that's a hard thing to do, not only because they're so young. The guy that took the last shot was like, what, 19 or 20, something like that? But they hadn't played. You just put them in at the end of the game. So you're coming off the bench cold. It's like a pinch hitter coming up in the bottom of the ninth in a World Series game. Game seven, game on the line. They're stepping up. They're swinging the bat for the first time. And that's a tough thing to do. And Italy gets the big win yesterday. Their first Euro Cup since the 60s. And how about the fans going wild, breaking in? How about that? I thought about that. I was watching the videos. Like, yeah, you know what? This could happen at football games. Did you see the videos yesterday of fans just rushing into the stadium that didn't have tickets, but they wanted to be there? And if you ever went to a sporting event, you know, like the security guards, some of the dudes you don't want to mess with. But a lot of the quote-unquote security are just like, you know, like they're senior citizens sometimes, just doing a job, you know, taking tickets at the Gamecocks football game or at Clemson football. And it could be easily bull rushed. That's what happened yesterday. These poor security guards. They weren't like these big buff dudes, you know, like that are guarding a stage at a concert. They're just people, you know, working outside. They got the yellow, they got the gold vest on. They're collecting tickets, whatever. They're trying to handle the lines. They don't even have any, like, it's not like they have a nightstick or anything, any weapons, right? They're just like older people working a job for the summer. Like, oh, the Euro Cup needs workers? Okay, let me go make some money. And the fans just bull rush. And to the point that other fans in the stadium that had paid for tickets started beating them up. He says, forget you. We actually paid for these tickets. You're not going to just come in here. They started beating up the people coming in. It was a wild scene. And after watching that video, I thought, you know what? I mean, that could happen really anywhere. You go to a Clemson game. I mean, there's police there. They probably track you down, kick you out. But if you got enough people like yesterday, I mean, it was probably over 100 people all at once just bull rushed into that arena yesterday. But Italy gets the big win, and it was a lot of fun to watch. The one soccer game I watched all year outside of the Charleston Battery. And now I celebrate the win like I'm part of the team. So congratulations to Italy. I enjoyed it. I don't know if there are any celebrations around here, but I saw plenty, right? Italians, very obnoxious when they won yesterday. They went out there with their flags, driving around with their shirts on, honking the horns in all different cities in this country. Only 4% of the population around here Italian, though, so I don't know if we got any type of those celebrations. Coming up, Conor McGregor. I've been teasing this all afternoon. We'll get to it when we come back. Conor McGregor has become Tony Montana. Conor McGregor is Scarface, and he even referenced the movie Scarface over the weekend. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
And for love's sake. week's mistake. Oh, you forgave. And soon both of us learned to trust, not run away.
It was no time to play.
We build it up
and build it up
and build it up. And now it's solid. Solid.
Coming up, Conor McGregor has become Tony Montana of Scarface. The Bar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Congratulations to the Italians yesterday winning the Euro Cup. I remember in 2006, we got really into, my friends and I was in high school, got really into the got into the World Cup. And I was talking after July 4th about fireworks. We were watching every time Italy would score or win the game, we'd run outside and shoot off fireworks in the driveway. I remember that. You know, but up in the Northeast, of course, they take, they're all into the Italian soccer around there. And I can only imagine what the scene was like yesterday. Hey, Conor McGregor lost Saturday night in the rematch, in his return back in the octagon. Broke his ankle in the process at the end of the first round. It's pretty gruesome. You can find the video online if you choose. It's pretty nasty. So he shatters his ankle, had to undergo a four-hour surgery to repair it. He was getting beat anyways. He was bleeding out of his ear. He was bleeding in his mouth. Broke the ankle. He lost that first round, and then at the end of the first round, right, broke the ankle, ended up losing the fight. And even after he lost, as you could imagine, he didn't handle the loss with grace. He continued to talk trash, which I will give him props. Two things. Number one, I can only imagine the pain. I mean, maybe the adrenaline and everything is still going on. That you don't feel the pain just yet when you shatter your left ankle. You know, like Dak Prescott, when he hurt his ankle, didn't seem to be an excruciating pain. Handled it well. I'm sure it hurt, you know, later on. But when it first happened, he was just holding his ankle, almost trying to pop it back into place himself. And I'm sure he was in pain, but it wasn't like he was, you know, rolling around on the ground or anything. He was just sitting there holding his ankle. McGregor, after he broke his ankle, was just sitting up against the cage of the octagon. He was just sitting in the corner. And Joe Rogan sat down next to him and interviewed him. So I give McGregor props for two things. Number one, the fact that after breaking your ankle like that, he's still sitting there talking trash. If I ever, God forbid, right, knock on wood, I hope I never sustain such an injury. But if I were to ever have an injury like that, I don't think I could just sit there and have a conversation with somebody talking trash. Like, I'd be telling them, get me an ambulance. Get me the hell out of here. I'm in a lot of pain. I probably couldn't even put a sentence together. I'd be in so much pain. So I give McGregor props for that. And the second part was that he was continuing to do his job. No, he wasn't fighting, but he was continuing to try to promote the next thing. Right? He was talking about another rematch, a rematch to the rematch. It would be a fourth time that they would fight. And to, you know, have the presence of mind that, like, hey, you just broke your ankle. But he continues to be that entertainer. He continues to, promote his brand, if you will, put himself out there, try to strike up the next fight. That whenever he recovers, okay, I got a fight waiting for me. But he sat there talking trash, including about his opponent's wife, which, you know, really should be a no-no. What do they always say, right? No family. You know, don't talk about someone's mother. Don't talk about their kids. No family. Usually religion is out too, like race as well. None of that. Don't make it that personal. Don't talk about family. Family's out of it. Don't talk about someone's religion when you're talking trash to an opponent. But even after he lost, right, he's still talking trash. And McGregor later posted on Instagram, quote, "You need people like me," which is one of the famous lines from the movie Scarface. And I thought this was perfect because McGregor is right that we do need people like him in the fight world. Right? You need heroes and you need villains. It's what wrestling is all based on. You have the people that you cheer for, you have the people you cheer against in wrestling, and those are the storylines. They pit one against the other, and you're rooting for one. And then some people like, you know, the quote-unquote villains. You root for the bad people, the bad boys, and you're pulling for them. And, you know, and it splits the arena, and people are invested and interested. They want to see good beat evil, the majority of people. And so it'd be very boring without conflict. UFC's the same way. Boxing's the same way. Anything that's involving these fights, like one-on-one, it would be boring without the conflict, without people to root against. If you watched a fight and thought, well, whoever wins, I'll be happy. Right? Either one of them can win. That's fine. That's not it. You want to be standing up, yelling at the TV, rooting for somebody, cheering them on. Right? Wanting someone to beat the other person's ass. yelling, yeah, get him, right? You got to have that rooting interest. You can't sit there indifferent and think like, well, I just want to see a good fight. Whoever wins, I'll be happy for him. They're all winners. No, that's nonsense. So UFC, this is what the sport is built on. I mean, it's what McGregor's career is built on. And he's a great fighter. It's not like he's just a great talker. At one time, at least, he was a great fighter as well. But these fighters have to promote themselves. They have to become brands. And that's what leads to the most money. You know, there's some guys that are doing these fights with the Paul brothers, Jake Paul, Logan Paul. And they've said, like, look, I'm making more money doing this than I ever did with the UFC. And that's because they weren't really big enough names. McGregor has developed himself into such a personality that even when he's not winning, he's still making money, still getting opportunities. People are still tuning in. He's got a ton of fans. But the trash talk becomes a little tacky, becomes a little tiresome when you can no longer back it up. You want to talk trash when you're at the top of the world and you're beating everybody and you're the champion? Okay, I get it. Right, talk trash, you at least back it up. It's part of the game. It's part of the fight world. You talk your trash, you get in the ring, you beat the guy, you back it up. All right, I get that. But when you're sitting there with a broken ankle, having just lost again, man, what are you talking for? And the scene from Scarface that he referenced with his tweet or a post on Instagram, in the scene, if you're not familiar with the film, Pacino gets into an argument with Michelle Pfeiffer's character at the restaurant, and they make a scene. All right, so everyone's in the restaurant. It's a nice restaurant. They're all looking at them. Like, oh, what's going on over there? And after she leaves, Pacino goes on this great two-minute monologue because it is very awkward in the restaurant, as you could imagine. Right? You ever see two people get into a screaming match in a public place like that? It becomes very awkward. You could cut the tension with a knife. Everyone's looking around like, oh, what's next? When can we go back to enjoying our meal? What's going to happen? And so Pacino gets up, and he's making his way out of the restaurant, but he delivers this great two-minute monologue, and it's a single-camera shot that pans the whole room. It starts from his right, pans to his left, follows him out of the restaurant, beautifully shot. But he gets up in this drunken stupor with everyone watching, and Pacino says to all the restaurant goers, you need people like me, people to point your finger at to feel better about yourself, to say that's the bad guy. And that's McGregor. Right, he is the bad guy right now. And when Pacino walks out, he says, it's the last time you're going to see a bad guy like this, which may also be true about McGregor. But in that movie, the character, Tony Montana, worked his way from humble beginnings to the top of his industry. Now, his industry happened to be moving drugs. McGregor is a fighter. But McGregor followed a similar path where, you know, he was broke. He was working like as a janitor on the side, trying to become a professional fighter. Had nothing growing up. Or in his early 20s, you know, he turned himself into this great fighter. Came from very humble beginnings. Both characters are very arrogant, hard workers, right? But arrogant, can spout off at the mouth. Both got themselves in some trouble along the way. And eventually, in the movie Scarface, Tony Montana got carried away. And he lost his way. He was still as arrogant as ever, but he was slipping. Wasn't performing as well. Right? And he, in the movie, his best friend, he ends up killing his best friend. He got caught laundering money by undercover cops. He eventually gets killed himself. We all know the classic scene at the end of the movie with the big shootout in his home, right? His sister as well didn't have a security team because he thought he could handle anything. He had all the TVs with the security cameras in his room. Right? It didn't work out. Too arrogant to see his downfall. And now Conor McGregor may be similar. He has lost 5 of his last 7 fights. Broke his ankle on Saturday. That's the next thing he's got to worry about. Probably won't recover the same way as it would have years ago. He's a little bit older now. Not the same guy or the same fighter he once was. Had a 4-hour surgery yesterday. He's on the downfall portion. And it's hard for a well-fed man to feel hungry. And what's the saying they always use in fighting? It's hard to get up and train when you're waking up in silk pajamas, something along those lines. Right? Point being, you get to a certain point, you don't have that same drive. You got all the money in the world. You got the big house. You're sleeping in silk pajamas. And it's hard for a well-fed man to feel hungry. You're making all that money. You don't have the hunger you once did. In the movie Scarface, Pacino bought a tiger just because he could. He had him caged up in his home just to show, you know, like, he's got the money. He's got the power. And along the way, you lose sight of the goals, of the hard work that got you there. You become a little more confident, but maybe less hardworking. You become even more confident or arrogant, but less productive. And eventually, it led to the demise of the character in Scarface. And while in a different sense, or certainly with a different outcome, I think we're seeing McGregor's demise in the octagon as well. And he referenced Scarface. He did it himself. He brought up the comparison on Instagram over the weekend. But I don't know if he's aware of how similar his career may be. And the most fitting reference may actually come from Michelle Pfeiffer's character at the beginning of that scene. Maybe that's the line McGregor should use. Because she tells Pacino at the very beginning before she storms off, "Can't you see what we're becoming? We're losers," is what she tells Pacino. "We're not winners anymore. We're losers." And Conor McGregor has now lost 5 of 7 fights. He was getting rocked again on Saturday. And then there he was, injured, in the corner of the ring, still talking his trash. And at a certain point, it just gets a little tacky. When you're winning, yeah, go ahead, talk your trash. But when you're continually getting beat, and now you got this injury, and I mean, he was getting whooped in the first round anyway, just tip your cap to the victor that just beat you in the octagon or the ring and move on. And by the way, I know the popular line in that scene, at least one of them, is "you need people like me," which is what McGregor posted on Instagram. Another one, you know, "say goodnight to the bad guys." He makes his way out of the restaurant. People like that line. I think the best line from that whole scene, and it's a classic scene from the movie Scarface, in case you haven't seen it. But the best line I think that Pacino uses is when he says, "I always tell the truth, even when I lie." I always love that line. And that great scene from Scarface, reminiscent. The whole movie. I was thinking of that movie. McGregor posted that line on Instagram. I thought, that's perfect. That's very fitting. Because I think there's a lot of parallels there. Hey, we'll talk plenty of baseball coming up. We have the Home Run Derby tonight. I think the Home Run Derby has already been ruined. I think it was ruined over 20 years ago. Tonight's Home Run Derby specifically. What we're seeing in baseball right now specifically, I think has been ruined from over 20 years ago. And I'll explain why coming up next hour. But another crushing blow for the Atlanta Braves. Look, this team is immune to being over 500. Now, you're coming off the terrible news with Ronald Acuna, who's out for the year. That's the crushing blow. And maybe that's tough to come back from. But you had a chance again to get over 500 yesterday, to go into the All-Star break over 500 for the first time. You'd be, I think, 3 games out of first if you won yesterday. You're thinking, okay, yeah, the Acuna news is terrible, but, you know, we're still in striking distance. We just got over 500. We cleared that first hurdle. All-Star break. Let's regroup, come back next week, play some good ball. And they lose yesterday to the Marlins. And now the Braves are 0-6 when they're 500. They've had 6 opportunities to get a win and get over 500 for the first time. They have lost all six chances. And in all instances, they lost multiple games. We'll have to wait and see after the All-Star break later on this week if they lose multiple games here as well. But all 6 times, not only did they lose, but it started a losing streak. And as I said last week, it's like that lawnmower. You keep pulling on the starter to try to get it to turn over. And it sounds like it's going to, but it never quite does. That's the Braves. They keep getting there. You keep pulling on that rope thinking, we're turning this thing on. They're turning this thing around. And then they just slip up and lose like 3 in a row. And they lost yesterday. But whether it was Travis d'Arnaud's injury, obviously Soroka's been crushing. Marcelo Zuna, the injury, and then the illegal issues keeping him away. Now Acuna's injured. I mean, one thing after another. And it's just that type of thing that it happens sometimes. The San Francisco Giants right now are getting career years from guys. They're having a great year. They're surprising a lot of people. And then some years, just everything goes wrong, and you have a disappointing year, and you surprise some people that way. That's the case for the Braves now. More on this coming up. Plus, we'll talk with Toby Hall, former big league catcher, and played his minor league ball in Charleston. He'll join us next. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.